So I want to talk about this. I want to build on what Patrick was mentioning about this random tensor model and the graphs, and construct a, first of all, I want to construct a code which maps Bach to the boundary, Bach degrees of freedom to boundary degrees of freedom, and then talk about this Bach state corrections and what happens to any entropies if you have, if I have a Bach state, a small Bach state, a Bach field inserted in the Bach of the theory. And then we talk about some kind of black hole formation and Hawking page transition. So first of all, to define a code from Bach to boundary, like what Fernando was describing yesterday, I need to have a bunch of Bach degrees of freedom, Bach uncontracted vertices, and a set of boundary uncontracted vertices. So the kind of graph I want to describe is something like, say this is nothing. This is just a circle. And I want to have a graph like this. So this is the same picture that Patrick was drawing. I'm having a bunch of uncontracted vertices on the boundary, a set of random projections in the box. And I also want to add a set of Bach degrees of freedom. So in the perspective of this random tensor and graph description, there is no difference between this Bach degrees of freedom and the boundary degrees of freedom. But I can call them, for simplicity, I can call them this boundary degrees of freedom. This lives in the boundary Hilbert space. And I have a set of Bach degrees of freedom. So the real power, real extra power of this random tensor model, when I'm working on a general graph, is that I can use real Takahashi surface not only for these joint boundary regions, arbitrary boundary regions. I can also use the real Takahashi formula for calculating entropy of this purely Bach indices. Because when talking about the graphs, Patrick wasn't mentioning anything about being Bach uncontracted vertices of the boundary. So in that sense, we have a very, very strong version of Takahashi. And so I'm going to say that this strong version will actually gives you the full power of Bach entanglement reconstructions and black hole formation or other analog things that we want to talk about. So is there any question here? So yeah. So say I have a state now similar to what Patrick was defining. I can have a state rho on a set of uncontracted vertices. I call it rho B boundary. And I want to use this state to define a map from Bach to boundary. As it was mentioned yesterday, I can define the mapping this way. Say I have a phi state on the boundary, on the Bach. And I can define the using this one, I can define the boundary state, the mapped state, to be equal to phi Bach, this rho B boundary. This is the kind of way I can define the mapping using this network, using a single state from Bach to boundary. It's the usual state channel duality. I can also, I mean, for simplicity, I would like to write the matrix formalism for that one, just the usual mapping. I call this mapping, this linear mapping M from Bach to boundary, which sends me from Hilbert space of Bach to Hilbert space of boundary. So this is the definition of the map. I defined something. I want to prove the nice properties for this something. For example, I want to say that I can push operators in the front Bach to the boundary. Or I want to say that I want to find the conditions that I have a isometry from Bach states, Bach degrees of freedom, to the boundary. I want to find the condition that this operator is isometry. So this is the next part. So basically, as I said, I want to push operator. From Bach to boundary. This is actually a statement of saying that for every operator in the Bach, are one that exists as an operator in the boundary, such that M of B should be equal to. This is very much similar to what Fernando was describing yesterday at each level. He was pushing operators through each tensor, but I'm doing that in a single step.
Typically, you're mapping many to one, then, I guess? It's not one to one.
In this operators?
Well, just your map between the states, for example.
So, no. Here, I want to find... So, at this level, I'm basically looking at the analog of low-energy subspaces in the bulk.
Yeah.
And so, for now, what I'm trying to achieve is I'm trying to achieve isometry, which means that I want to map any single state to a fixed state to just a fixed state of the bulk to a fixed state of the boundary. So it's going to be one to
one way.
It's injective but not surjective.
Right, yes, not one to one. It's plain English.
Yes, right. Yeah. Yes, that's a different story. But for a second, I want to talk about.
No, it's one to one, but it's not onto.
Yeah, that's
right. Oh, right, right. So for a second, I'm not defining any mapping from boundary to bulk.
Okay,
yeah.
Yes.
But still, that requires the number of bulk indices to be not larger than the number of boundary indices.
So yes. So I will find I tell you the condition of the isometry, and when the moment I tell you that condition, you see that it also means that the bulk vertices should be the dimension of bulk vertices should be small. Yeah. Or equivalently, if I have a row of AB boundaries, I want to say that for every OB, there exists a such that I have this property that if I can act by O in the bulk in the state, or the state I get is equivalent to acting by another operator on the boundary. And this is very much similar to this transpose trick that you can always do in the, for example, a TFT term of a double that you have act by operator in the right CFT and you can move it to the left CFT. But as you remember from that case, this you don't need to have bell curves to do that. The only condition you have for this one is that row B, the reduced density matrix, or the subsystem B should be full rank. But unfortunately, it's not a really entropic condition. So I'm looking at the second condition of having isometry. So if I require isometry from bulk to boundary, this is also going to be a statement about rho b, but it's a more restrictive statement, which is saying that rho b should be maximally mixed. So rho b is a reduced sensitivity matrix on subsystem b. And now this is an entropy condition. So I can check it entropically. It's saying that the entropy of rho b box, entropy of this bulk subregion, entropy of bulk Dangenigans should be actually equal to its maximal possible value. And now I'm going to use the full power of this generic RT to calculate the entropy of the bulk vertices just based on geometry and the mean cuts. So before that, I'm going to just introduce some notation. I'm going to call this dimension of the bulk vertices to be small d, and every other thing be large d.
Hey, maybe just make a comment, although I'm sure you're going to get to it, but just being able to have one such map isn't enough to make it an error correcting code, right? Because you want to be able to push it to the boundary in different ways.
I'm not talking about error correcting code.
Yeah,
you're
just pushing it out to the entire. It's going to in general have support on the entire boundary.
That's exactly what I'm doing now. So I mean, just for a second, the first part, I'm going to talk about the condition that I can map everything in bulk to the boundary.
Yeah.
And the moment I do that, I want to now check that if I can reconstruct any operator in a certain region of the bulk, in entanglement bridge or not, or I want to find the condition afterwards.
Yeah.
So let me just make sure I understand. Your use of the word isometry allows the possibility that the map is not onto?
Yes.
Okay. But nevertheless, it seems that 1 and 2 are equivalent.
Oh, actually, this is true. I mean, if you have 4, you're not necessarily maximally mixed. I mean, intuitively, it should be actually also...
If you have an isometry, it seems that you can just multiply on one side by the isometry and the other side by its adjoint in order to push operators.
That's right. That's exactly right.
But in the other direction, is it possible to push operators to the boundary if that map is not an isometry?
You can do that. You can push operators to the boundary.
But it won't preserve, for example, the hermeticity of the operators.
Or you can destroy the spectrum, or it's just... Yeah. I mean, it's not going to be good, good mapping. Because you can change the norm of your operators, you can destroy hermeticity, everything. But yeah, I mean it's kind of obvious, like, and intuitively easy to see that if you have isometry, you can probably push everything out. So I'm gonna keep this picture. So now it comes to condition of isometry. I want to check that. Find the entropy of rho b. I want to see when it's going to be maximal. So now entropy of rho b is actually equal to size of min cuts separating the spot vertices and the boundary vertices. And you can imagine having many different cuts. I mean, one possible cut is something that cuts through the network. One possible cut. And another possible cut is probably the cut that cuts all these dangling bark edges. And you know that the case, I mean, I know that if I cut all the bark edges, then the entropy I get from your Takanagi formula is equal to number of bark vertices times log dimension of everything, log dimension of d, log d, log a small d. So in that case, I know that if I cut all the bark vertices, then we have a maximally mixed, my entropy is maximal, and we have isometry. So the condition of having isometry is that the mean cut separating B bark vertices from the boundary is actually the cut that passes through all the bark edges. So in another sense, I shouldn't have, I mean, for example, if a small d is very small, then I know that it's always favorable to cut just the small blockages. But as I increase the d, the mean cut may find another bottleneck through the network. And then I will have no isometry from bulk to boundary. And we have isometry actually from this mean cut to the bulk. I will have an isometry from this mean cut to the boundary, but nothing from bulk to the boundary.
So if the cut were such that it still was in isolated regions around each edge that is in the interior of the network, it would still have this maximally mixed property, but I guess that would never be an optimal cut. Is that correct?
Sorry, you're talking about a scenario that I have cuts here?
Yeah.
So I can have this kind of scenario, but then it's not a good cut because it doesn't give me the... It doesn't give me the maximal entropy. I mean, the entropy I get from here is not equal to entropy I get from this cut. So it means that the bottleneck is not here, it's actually through the network. The moment that I start cutting edges off the network, then I'm probably outside the region of isometry.
Are you assuming that there's one external edge on each of these?
Bulk.
On each of these bulk vertices, or is
there? I can imagine. I'm not assuming that now, but no, I don't need the assumption.
I'm just a little surprised. Suppose there was just one external edge in the middle of the bulk, and I had a cut that was just a sphere around that one, but that had many bulk vertices. I guess I would be surprised that that didn't make that one in the middle maximally mixed.
So it
doesn't.
So it doesn't actually say you're talking in this kind of scenario that I have one. And so say this is my boundary and this is my ball.
Yes. Yeah,
and you're saying that say I'm cutting here. Then no, this is not isometry from here to there. Because actually
including also the
Oh, you don't need to cut. If you're cutting here, if you're cutting these three lines, you have already separated B from boundary.
Yes, yes.
Then yeah, you don't need to cut it here.
So you're saying that does not, the one you drew does not lead to it being maximum.
Yes, this is not maximum mix. So actually, if I split these lines from these points, these bell pairs, if I split my network, then I will have isometry from this main cut to the ball. I have isometry from this main cut to the boundary, but no isometry from this ball vertex to the boundary.
One way of thinking about this is just that you're definitely maximally mixed if you cut all of the internal bulk edges, right?
I agree.
By definition. And so if the min cut wants to go somewhere else, it will want to go somewhere else because that gives you a smaller entropy. So if the min cut is unique, at least, then the only way to get the isometry condition is to cut those bulk edges.
I guess I was considering that it wouldn't want to go there, but you could still analyze what would happen if it did go there.
And maybe what does that mean, though?
Well, because you're really doing a sum with this D to the line of all of it.
Oh, the sum.
Yeah. So it'll come in the subleading phase. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's necessarily physically important.
It will have a vanishing contribution to the entropy. But in large D limit, you probably don't see that.
So if rho v is nearly maximally mixed, then do we know that it's nearly isometric?
So if I have the deficit of, if the difference between Ryota Takayanagi and Rainy 2 entropy going to zero, which means the purity is also going to be maximal, then I know that I have a almost isometry, I guess.
In an average sense.
In an average sense. I mean, with high probability.
I'm a little confused about this discussion. When you're talking about entropy, are you talking about the entropy of the bipartition into A and B?
I'm talking about entropy of bipartition between. So this is a quantum state, which lives on this two Hilbert spaces, bulk and boundary. I'm talking of entropy by partition between this bulk and boundary.
Okay. But that's a property of the state which is shared by the bulk and boundary.
That's right.
And you have a one decomposition, right?
Yes.
So the entropy is independent of where you cut, right?
The formula we have for entropy is that the entropy is equal to min cut. So I'm not, given the graph and the state, I'm not free to choose the cut. I know that the entropy is equal to min cut. And now I'm just trying to find the min cut and evaluate entropy based on that.
When he uses the term, when I cut here, what he means is if the min cut is here.
Right.
So you're trying to find upper bounds on the entropy by studying different min cut or different cuts.
I'm trying to find, yes.
Okay.
There
is an entropy of the bipartition, and that's fixed, and you're studying different upper bounds depending on how you cut.
Yes, and I know that if I find the min cut, then entropy is equal to min cut.
Okay.
Yes.
But sorry, just to clarify, you're really interested in the map M as an isometric map from boundary to bulk degrees of freedom, but as a mathematical technique, you are studying the dual state in which you're treating boundary and bulk degrees of freedom as separate tensor factors.
Yes.
Did you mean, John, say boundary to bulk is
bulk to boundary here, actually, but yeah, I'm looking at.
That's fine, sorry.
Yes. So I have a state here, which is state rho. And this is just a quantum state. I want to interpret that state as a channel from bulk to boundary. That's exactly correct. So now let me start varying the dimension d, the small d versus large d. So if the small d is the dimension of bulk versus is very small, then I have a few amount of bulk matter, or just very, very small amount of bulk entanglement, then this is obviously the min cut goes through these bulk vertices. at some point, if I start increasing this d, then I will see that the min cut, at some point, we go through this background network, this bell curve network, because it's then the screen cut will not be the min cut. And in that case, I will break the isometry. So it's somehow similar. So the story is that as I increase more and more entanglement in the ball, then I break the isometry. It's similar to black hole formation. I will come back later in the last part of the talk. But if it's clear, I would like to talk about this entanglement wedge reconstruction now. So say I have a network.
Sorry, I thought there was something you were going to explain that you didn't. Maybe you explained it and I missed it. Or did Patrick promise someone was going to explain it? That you can match the one over n corrections to Rutaki-Nagi in this case by feeding in entangled states.
Oh, did
you explain that? Maybe you didn't.
No, I will include the entanglement. I will include the bulk vertices in the second part of my talk. Okay, so this is, I'm still in the first part. I will talk about this part, what we said in the next one.
Oh, okay, sorry, I thought we were already in that part.
Yeah, sorry. So say I have two boundary parts, and I have this entanglement with gamma A. Oh, maybe I shouldn't use gamma because you use it. No, that's actually correct. And this has length L. And I have a set of bulk vertices. And this, I split this bulk vertices into two subsets, C and D. So this is C, and the rest is D. So I know that I was saying the regime. I was saying the regime that I have an isometry from bulk to boundary. I want to find the condition that I can recover C on region A. That's my goal now. So this is all actually, as was mentioned yesterday, it is some kind of error correction condition. I'm not going to describe it in detail what happens, but say I can look at this mapping as an isometry from C. I can look at my state as a mapping from C to AB, or actually ABD, because like using this state channel duality. So I have this C, A, B, D. I want to find the condition that I can recover C on A. That's the entanglement ridge reconstruction. I can write it in a purely entropic way. So first of all, I know that if I can reconstruct C in A, there should be no information about C in BD. I will write it as C. Mutual information between C or BD should be zero. I'm looking for conditions of bulk reconstruction of C in A, and this is one condition. Or equivalent for the case of I have a pure background state, this also equivalent to condition that C, mutual information C and A should be maximal. And saying that all information in C is actually in A. If I have one of these two conditions, which are equivalent, I can guarantee that I can reconstruct C on A. But let me write this condition. So it's saying that S of C plus S of BD is equal to S of BCD. That's the condition I have. I know that I'm the full background state. The background state is actually a pure state. So entropy of BD is equal to entropy of AC, the complement. I can simplify this relation. ICD is equal to entropy of A. Now let me write this using this Stern version of R to write this formula in a geometric way. So S of C is equal to mean cut separating the bulk vertices as C from everything else. I know it's going to be a cut cutting all the dangling A's in the C. So it's going to be size of C. By this I mean number of clicks in C times log B. So this is SC. How about S of AC? S of AC is the mean cut separating C and A from B and D. Has two contributions. Basically, has a large contribution from this mean cut, which I call it L times log D, plus another contribution from the from this bulk extra vertices. So the size of this one is equal to entanglement wedge of A intersection D times log small d. If you have any question about this part, you can. So is it clear? Not about this part.
Is it so obvious that there isn't a different min cut in that case?
So here.
Where, yeah. This would be one possible min cut.
Yes, I'm actually considering the case that's. Yes, I'm calculating entanglement wedge in existence of this bulk external vertices. So I'm just actually interested in the min cut. So that might be deformed by this thing.
Separate, yeah. I guess that's a good point that we want to make. So you have A, you have B, and you have bulk free indices, and you're calculating the min cut of A with respect to its complement, which is B plus the bulk.
Yes.
So in that scenario, it could be that the entanglement wedge of A plus the entanglement wedge of B don't give you the full space.
That's right. Entanglement wedge of A, yes, that's right. But as you will see, that this term will cancel in the calculation. I mean, if I write to the next right-hand side of the equation. So it doesn't really matter.
You have two different capital B's here, right?
All right, so.
But if it's a log of a capital B, it's a log of
a capital B. It's never
Yeah, and this is a red D. this is a red D. Red D.
And then that D over there.
This is a white B.
That's a white one.
White D, which is that one.
But gamma A intersect D is already.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. So this is red D.
D U C. I don't know. Why would gamma A intersect C?
Yeah, what's that?
Gamma A. Why is that intersecting C?
Why is it D instead of C?
Oh, because I'm calculating the entropy of AC. So. One part is A and C, and I'm looking at the mean cut separating A and C from B and D. So the natural mean cut is this one, plus this small, cutting all the small terms in the D.
Well, you're cutting things in C.
No. No. So let me, I drew
A and C to get the entropy of AC.
So this might be a bit confusing because I drew a line next around C, but this line is not a part of mean cut. So essentially, so these are bulk vertices. And the mean cut separating AC from BD is actually this line, this red line, and this small cuts.
When you first drew this diagram, I had no idea it would be so important, so I should have asked earlier. That annular region in your diagram?
This part?
Yeah, well, the little ring-shaped region.
Oh, this one?
Yeah, what's going on there? What's
this this is actually the ball. These are the region that bulk vertices exist.
Oh, there are no bulk vertices in that annular region?
In here?
Yes.
Nah, it can be, but I'm looking at the generic scenario that there is no. But I can extend this region to the boundary. It will not change anything.
Yeah, it seems to me.
I mean, what puzzles me is unless it goes out to the boundary,
I don't understand the diagram that's written underneath.
Oh, I will say that's
a box with an incoming edge and three outgoing edges.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm having the background network everywhere to the boundary. So I have this background graph. This background graph exists here. So I
but no internal, no external vertices, no.
And there is some external vertices here, so.
No bulk vertices in the region outside the edge.
Yes, that's exactly correct. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So let me draw some more nice space. So I have this graph, and this looks like my background geometry. These are my boundary vertices that I'm not actually drawing here. I'm just representing them by these lines. And I have some bulk vertices here that I'm drawing by these small lines there. For simplicity, I'm assuming that these background filters are my background geometry. I'm not drawing them here. But there exists something that's connecting everything to each other.
The S of AC? Is the min should be the min cut separating AC from BD, right? Wouldn't that just be that curve you drew there?
Yeah.
I don't understand why you're also cutting some of those C lines.
These are not C lines. These are so. C is a region here. C is a region here in the box.
Oh, okay.
And the rest is D.
What are the cuts there then?
Those are part of D.
These are part of D.
Okay.
He's not just the left.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, so this is. Oh. So the reason I'm a bit confused with drawing this thing, because the moment I draw this line, it looks like a min cut. But I'm just. This line here, this red line, is actually just separating regions. I'm saying this is region C, this is region D. And D is very large, D contains
D. And why are we only interested in part of the bulk edges?
I want to talk about bulk to bond reconstruction. So I want to find the condition that I can reconstruct. So I want to find the condition that I can reconstruct at C in A.
OK, so it's just you're focusing on some particular edges you'd like to reconstruct.
Yes.
Yeah, so if you feed, so the other vertices you can think about in, I guess, two different ways. One is you feed a product state into all of them, and they're just tensors, and you can forget about the product state that you fed in. Or you feed in an entangled state, and then now you have to draw extra lines in the background.
Yes.
Vertex, right?
Yes. But I will somehow change.
Container, but that's OK.
I guess that's true.
I guess the FLM prime made a want to just think about the entropy of just all lines.
Wait, so FLM I think is going to come from the extra little red dashes eventually.
Yeah. So somehow this, let me write the right hand side of the equation. You'll see what happens. So the right hand side is saying the entropy. For calculating right hand side, I should find the min cut separating region A from B, C, and D. That will also have this contribution from large min cut, which is L log D. I have two more contributions. Contributions have a contribution like this term, which is gamma A intersection red C, red D. Like D plus gamma A intersection C like D. Okay? I mean, in the picture, I drew C to be completely inside this gamma A, but here I'm not assuming that.
Are you assuming here that little d is much smaller than big D?
Yes, I'm in the regime that I have isometry from mark to boundary. I need to be that regime to work out these conditions.
But even in addition to that, you might worry that that curve, well, it's not obvious to me that
the same curve, there might not be some other min cut that separates A from B.
So in for calculating these two parts?
Yeah, the
yeah, that's actually a bit tricky.
Right.
I mean, you can think of it in two ways. One is that D is so small that it have zero back reaction.
Okay.
This is one way of thinking.
D is so small.
Or because this, or C is totally inside the gamma A. In which case, this line is somewhat sensitive in the stopping D, which is appearing in both sides of the inequality. So L should stay constant. So this, I will not change this. But things get a bit tricky when C is actually marginally close to the mean cut. If you have a back reaction, then, I mean, if you are in a regime that D is still small, but you can have a small back reactions, then it will change the mean cut a little bit.
So we should just read this formula as assume we're in a regime where this formula is in fact true.
I mean the regime that these two L mean cuts, I mean the entanglement wage of this entropy for this region AC and entanglement in the region A, they both have the same mean cut in the bulk. I mean the regime.
Sorry, what exactly was the definition of little d?
D is a dimension.
Which is different by the
so what you're saying might not be equal to the
large d.
Oh.
Yeah, actually in the regime that this d is small now.
Okay.
So I'm looking at a very small subspace of the bulk.
Okay.
Maybe you can consider it as a low energy subspace.
But well, I would have said even if it's a low energy subspace, even if little d equals big d.
Yes. So at some point, I mean, we discussed the condition that little d is actually is large, and then you have a duality from, you have a mapping from boundary to bulk as well. But
I mean, see, the reason why, the thing is, the reason, see, I'm thinking it's a hyperbolic geometry.
Right.
So then even if little d equals big D, it's still an embedding that's not even close to being onto, right? Because there's a lot more legs at the boundary than there are legs dangling. So I don't need big D to be much bigger than little d. I think the reason why you guys keep needing that is because you're trying to say things that are true if the graph is, you know, hyperbolic, like that works for any graph.
I guess that's correct. I'm not sure if it's the little d is equal to large d is okay. I guess that's okay, but at least some proportion.
There's some
in that case, it will work.
Yeah.
Yes.
As long as it's hyperbolic.
As long as it's hyperbolic,
yeah.
then I don't need a small d to be exponentially small.
Yeah.
I don't
right.
need that.
So also, you want to have some more resolution per ADS radius?
Yeah.
You want the product of the small d's inside the ADS radius to be small, roughly the order of the big d.
Yeah. If you want to start trying to blow up the ADS regions, then yeah. I'm agnostic about being able to do that using these methods.
Should I simplify? So I can simplify this by saying that this cancels with this one. This cancel with this one. And so the condition I get is that C is equal to C intersection gamma A. Or C is inside gamma A. So in this regime, if I have an operator in the entanglement range of A, I can always reconstruct it in the boundary.
So you weren't necessarily assuming that C was in it from the beginning.
Sorry?
You weren't necessarily.
No.
But so you're saying if it isn't, it turns out we can.
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
So in terms of time,
yes,
you might have to make some selections for the remaining topics. How much longer do you think you?
I guess the last part is pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like 5 minutes or something.
Oh, sure.
I can do the last part if you want. I mean,
good question. Once you add correlations, which I guess you're going to tell us about, does the condition I, the mutual information between C and BD, equals zero, does that fail?
Mutual information between C and
zero.
C and equals zero, does it fail?
Once you have correlation, then I don't see how it, I don't see how the mutual information can be zero.
So I guess you need that condition to have a, I mean, generically, you need that condition to have a, to have a reconstruction.
To have this error correction.
Right.
But once you have correlations, this condition is not satisfied anymore.
I guess yes.
But I think that, but that's the thing that's fixed by operator algebra quantum error correction.
I agree.
Yeah.
But then that says that this is not perfect.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that may still be a thing to fix in this.
Yeah. So I just quickly mentioned what's the result of the second part. I will go to the last part. So the result of the second part is that if I have a very, very small box state inserted in my system, say, I have A, this entanglement phase of A. Say I have a bulk state, psi, injected in these two bars. And this psi is, entropy of psi is so small that I have no back reaction again. So it's this very, very subleading theorem. Then the entropy of, rain into entropy of A is actually equal to mean cut, size of mean cut for A, log D, as expected, plus one extra term, which is S2 of psi gamma A. So it's somehow equal to min cut, as expected, plus the entropy coming from the state psi, which resides in the entanglement region of A. But I guess I don't have time to go further in that direction. So is there any question? So now let me talk about the case that I increase the bulk. So these are D, 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 G, D. And I have this boundary so I would like to insert an inject a state here in the bulk, but I'd like to inject a highly entangled state and see what happens when I increase the dimension of that highly entangled state. So one way of injecting a state is this just connecting them to a vertex. If I do that, it will correspond to injecting a random state. And I can study geodesics in this scenario. Say I have this region A. I want to calculate the entropy of this region A. So if I had no, say this dimension is super small, then I have no back reaction. Then the geodesic goes like this. And it also should cut these lines inside. So the entropy I get, consistent with this formula that I didn't describe how it derived, for a random state, I get that the entropy of this subregion A is equal to entropy, is equal to mean cut, plus the contribution I get from cutting this bulk vertices, the entropy of this bulk vertex. But now let me increase the dimension of D. At some point, it's going to be more favorable for the mean cut, so I increase D. It's going to be more favorable to go through. I mean, the mean cut wants to avoid this cutting these lines. So the mean cut may go something like this. As I increase the bulk vertex, it starts repelling the mean cuts.
So separate?
Yes.
Here you cut the So you have some lines going from the bulk to your state, let's say the state that you're encoding, and you cut them on the side of A, but you could, might as well have cut them on the side of B.
Yes.
And that might have told you, okay, then actually the...
I have no free, here in this scenario, I have no free dangling edges in the box, so min cut for A is equal to min cut for B.
And I'm just saying, like, the entropy would go down again or something when you have more than half the boundary.
Right. So
because it's an overlogical state in the end, right? But
it could be that the back action actually moves you to the other side.
Yeah. Yes. That's another scenario. I will talk about that as well. So if I look at, so say I have the picture from above of the same thing. So it's going to be region A. Then, when the dimension D is small, I will have this cut and contribution from bulk. As I increase the dimension, this cuts will start repelling them. So it starts repelling the others. It's like just like adding matter and changing the curvature. At some point, I will have a phase transition. I mean, but still, when I'm trying to increase the size of A, there are points in the middle that can be, I mean, so I can increase the size of A and get a continuous curve going from this side to this side. But at some point, when I increase D, small d, there would be points in the bulk, there would be a circle appearing in the bulk that no geodesic can penetrate.
But that doesn't require there to be a black hole.
No. Yeah, it can be very heavy star. Yes. That's actually.
Or even right. Just the small that's very, star that's very small compared to the ADS radius.
That's right. Yeah. But.
That's a true statement about general relativity, but if you shoot a boundary, a geodesic from the boundary, it won't go through the star.
Well, they basically, even a very light star in asymptotically flat space time. Well,
yeah.
It's always more favorable to avoid the star. So if the star is small compared to the ADS scale, you'll always have a phase.
So what happens by continuity if you move the edges of the geodesic?
So, yeah, Nookend and Simon did that paper about this a couple of years ago where they had scalar solitons. And
yeah.
So what happens is if you try and shoot the geodesic out starting from some radius where it's minimal, then at some point, instead of getting bigger regions, it starts getting smaller regions again. So it means that there's simply no geodesic that gets a region that's close to half. So if you're near the core of the star,
it's minimal before it passes.
There are geodesics which
go through
the
star,
but they aren't minimal for any.
Instead, something happens near the horizon of short children.
Yes. So, but at some point I can increase this dimension d so much that I will stay in the regime that I have super large thing in the middle that no geodesic can penetrate. Then if I increase the dimension, then I just jump here. This looks like a black hole. I mean, if it doesn't very much, I mean, if you're not convinced that it's a black hole, I can talk about a scenario that I keep entanglement, entangled pairs, entangled bulk vertices free. I can keep the uncontracted bulk vertices free without contracting the entanglement. You can assume that they are being entangled with somewhere else in the universe or another copy of the same thing. And I can actually compute the, in that scenario, I can compute the entropy of the full boundary.
In light of the previous comment, so what's the distinction between this and a, or between black hole and star for this?
So I don't really know how I can distinguish from this jumping of geodesics, black hole and star. But I can distinguish by calculating the entropy. I can actually see a phase transition by calculating entropy of the full bulk when I have uncontracted bulk vertices.
You can tell the difference between a pure object and a mixed object.
Okay.
But a star or a black hole could both be either pure or mixed.
So now I'm going to the case of a mixed object. and I'm going to still increase the dimension d in the bulk. So in this scenario, I'm considering the entropy of the full bond, full boundary. And then this entropy is, so let me draw it in a more simple way. If I have this bulk vertices, when this d dimension is very small, the mean cut is actually cutting all of them, as I was describing before. So as I increase, so this is like a volume-like entropy. But as I increase the small d, at some point, it's more favorable to for the mean cuts to go through a line like this. So it's become part of this bond, this bulk vertices has become area-like. So at some point, as I increase the little d, I will have a volume-like behavior. But at some point, it's going to be more favorable to have a horizon and partly area-like behavior for the entropy. And I guess
The entropy has log big d's instead of log little d's.
Yes, but now I'm in a regime that I can change little d, so it's a small d, to be actually numerically large.
This isn't really like all behavior transition. This is more a competition between the order of like a Lorentz squared term of the entanglement of the recheck energy and the FLM correction. So, right. It's decreasing. Increasing little d is like reducing the h bar to the point where you.
I would say it's like adding more and more energy in the bulk. I mean, if you look at here, looking at the geodesic spin before, somehow, my intuition is that increasing d or adding more bulk vertices, they somehow correspond to having more bulk degrees of freedom, more matter.
You said more energy in the bulk, but you meant more entropy in the bulk, right?
Yes.
If you add energy in the bulk in a pure state, it would not have this effect on the in your calculation.
Right. I'm trying to just make an analogy this level.
But is that the right interpretation? If I cut one of these legs that's sticking up, I should interpret that as an FLM type contribution. And if I cut internal edges in the plane, I should interpret that as a recheck energy.
I guess yes.
Tom?
Yeah.
He's adding a pure state there, and it's affecting the geometry. So it's not just a question of adding entropy.
In the second example, he was leaving indices dangling, so he's adding entropy in the bowl. I agree in the first example.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm done.
All right, thanks, Zephyr.